Hey y'all, I'm Whitney Scarborough, the host of Wits End. Here we are real people asking hard questions. If you think you hear the hum of a fridge or a train in the background, it's because you probably are. We are recording these episodes from the comfort of my home in a small town called LaGrange, Texas. Today I am joined by Melissa Gomez. She is a friend who has weathered many seasons of life with our family. Melissa shares about being a bilingual woman of color who is single and yet chooses to do real up-close life with people in all different stages. Let's dive in. Welcome today to this episode of Wits End. And our guest is Melissa Gomez, who lives in Dallas, is from Honduras, and I met her in the Dominican Republic. So, wow. How's that for an introduction?
Lots of moving pieces there.
Yeah. So, Melissa, okay, so let's start with, tell us a little bit about yourself and your background.
Yeah, I grew up in Honduras, was born here in the States, but grew up my entire life in Honduras, and then kind of did college in Indiana, and then in college just had this desire to be a missionary. And so I explored some options, and the Dominican Republic was one of those options. And so a door opened for me to be able to go teach at a school, Christian school down there. And so taught there for 4.5 years.
Awesome. Which is how we cross paths.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So you, when I first met you, I was learning Spanish, and I remember thinking, I remember attempting to speak with you in Spanish because you were fluent in Spanish and obviously also English. And I remember saying, hola, Melissa. And you just saying, hi, how are you? And you kind of just graciously gave me that kind of like, hey, my English might be a little bit better than your Spanish without saying that. So, but tell us a little bit about what it was like growing up in a home where both languages were spoken.
Yeah, my parents made it a point to make sure that we would learn both languages so that we could live in the States if we needed to, and they knew that English was probably one of those languages that is necessary around the world, and so that it could open up a ton of doors for us if we knew both languages. And so I only spoke to my dad in English and only spoke Spanish to my mom, and to this day, that stands true. And so if you come over for dinner, it creates kind of crazy dynamic if you don't know both languages, because you will only get half of the conversation that happens, because I will direct anything I say to him in English. And then when I turn to my mom, it will all be in Spanish. So,
wow. So do you say one of them is more kind of like your heart language, or do you just feel like kind of both? Like, yes, they both are.
Yeah, both of them seem to me as like this very neutral. They're both very equal. When I'm talking to my dad, I can express my emotions the best in English. But if I'm talking to my mom and I am super frustrated and want to get my feelings out, like, it'll just come out in Spanish. And so it's very much a neutral. English and Spanish are very much my heart language, and all. Dream in Spanish if I'm hanging out with more Spanish-speaking people, and I'll dream in English if I'm hanging out with mostly English-speaking people. So
yeah, that's cool. So, okay, put us in your shoes. You are, we could say Hispanic, we could also say Latina woman living in the United States. You live in Texas. You're a single woman. What is that? Tell us a little bit about just what it's like to be in your shoes.
Well, it's a little bit crazy as, times have just kind of evolved too as I've lived here in the States for the past 5 years. I think politically it's become kind of like this harder question to deal with, but also within the ministry that I work with, they're trying to diversify. And so it's been like a lot of talk of getting people of color on our staff. And so it's been a conversation that has become more something that is okay to talk about. And so I've kind of enjoyed that coming to the States around that time. where these conversations are being had. But it is, it's a tricky spot to be in as a single woman, and adding onto that being a Latina. But I very much feel like this is kind of where the Lord has placed me for this time. But it is hard to be looked at one way and not being asked any questions, or just being assumed that I am a certain way because I am Latina. And then also on the flip side, there's this weird ministry part where you get asked to do a lot of things, but you never know if it's just because of the color of your skin or if you're truly gifted in that role. Wow. And so it's kind of balancing out, where has the Lord truly blessed me and gifted me? And where is it something that I need to speak up and say, hey, I think you're doing this for the wrong reasons, and I would love for you to see my giftings rather than the color of my skin.
Wow. Okay. So let's talk about that a little bit more, right? Our tagline is real people, hard questions. Yeah. So how do you feel sometimes like your race impacts your work or how people see you, your skin color? Talk a little bit about more what you just kind of touched on.
Yeah, I think I get to be part of really cool stuff in the Young Life world and even in a church. I think I kind of stick out like a sore thumb at times, especially with being fluent in both English and Spanish. It's something that makes people very attracted to the thought of having somebody join their church that is fluent in English and Spanish, like just of the possibilities that could happen with that. And in ministry, it's like, I get to do really cool stuff because of being a Latina on staff, but it does just create this constant questioning of my character of like, is it because of who I am and who the Lord's created me to be? Or is it because I am a Latina to say? And so even though it opens up a broad door of like, there's so many opportunities for you, there is a lot of internal insecurities that come out that are really hard to shut off when you're in that world of, is this truly who I am, or is this something that just comes with the color of my skin? And so it's truly trying to really focus in on my identity comes in Christ and with nothing else. So it's like a, just constant reminders of that's not what defines me. And that's not what should be defining me on a daily basis.
Okay, so along those lines, and again, asking some hard questions, what are some of the most hurtful things someone can say or do to you as a Hispanic woman?
I think it's just even on the daily life stuff of walking into a store, most people will never get checked for what they've purchased in their bags. And so I've had one instance where it's a store that I know doesn't really check what you're walking out with. And there was one instance where I did get stopped and I knew exactly why I was being stopped. And to be followed in a store to just make sure that I'm not going to steal anything. Are just things that are things that people probably wouldn't notice, that they would think they're just trying to be helpful and cater to her, but it's like not well received.
Right.
And so when that's happening, it's like so hurtful to leave there and realize I was just like
racially stereotyped.
Yeah. Right. Stereotyped, and I wasn't trusted in that store, even though I can have all the money in the world, but I can walk in there and I can't turn off my brown skin and the assumptions that come with that. And so I think in those senses, it's hard. And then the fact when people do assume like, oh, she's Latina, so she'll be late, of never even asking like, what type of like, how do you like to show up on time?
Right.
Are you a timely person, or do you kind of are more lenient with time? And so I think when people don't ask questions out of fear of it being insulting and then just assuming who I am, I think causes a lot of hurt when in in the end, if you would have just asked a simple question of who I was and really wanted to get to know me, it could have saved a lot of hurt and it would have been a more enjoyable interaction.
As an individual versus as a stereotype.
Right.
Yeah. So a funny side story that we were just joking about is that Melissa and I got to know each other through the Dominican Republic and living there at the same time, which as a culture has a more fluid view of time, which is in line with just kind of the overall Latin view of time, which is a little bit more, you know, when you're in a conversation with someone, you're spending time with someone, you don't rush through that to get necessarily to the next thing on time. And so there's a high value of people over an agenda, which I didn't really understand until I lived in Latin America. But what was funny was that when you put us together, who was more myself coming from the United States, there was an expectation that I was going to be on time, which I almost never am. And Melissa, being someone who is from Honduras, there was an assumption that she would always be late. So it's just been interesting, even in that, as we've gotten to know each other, how sometimes there's assumptions on both ends that shift once you get to know the individual, as opposed to kind of seeing someone under the heading of a stereotype.
Right. Yeah, correct. Yeah, and it's funny with just, and it may not even be a time, like a timeliness. I think it's just time management as well comes in. Of like, that's something that the Lord's gifted me with, of being able to know exactly how much time it's going to take me to do something. And some of my closest friends, actually all of my closest friends, not one, has the gift of time management. And so it's been interesting to see that, as a stereotype, I'm the one that would not be one to be on time. And I just grew up with parents that if you're there on time, you're late.
Yeah.
And so we would always show up 5 to 10 minutes before we were supposed to be there. And that was just something that my dad drilled in us to be timely people. And our entire family is just very much on time to everything. And even growing up in Honduras, we would give the missionaries that were there a birthday card that probably said, hey, you're going to come at 6 p.m. And to our Honduran friends, it's like, you're coming at 4 p.m. so that you actually show up at 6 p.m., you know? And
like
so there's
centered time. Yeah.
Yeah. You tell your family or like your Honduran friends, like, you got to be there at 4 in hopes that they'll show up at 6. But then you're looking at the missionary families and going like, hey, we need you there at 6. Yeah. Like the party starts at 6. Yeah. And so it was just like, again, this interesting dynamic, even growing up in Honduras, of like, it is assumed that we will be late.
Yeah, that's funny. Okay, so talk a little bit about singleness and about being single. And I know one of the things that you've shared with me is just how neat it's been to really find a group of friends that where there are single people, there are married people, there are people without children, there are people with children, and this group that's kind of breaking the mold in a lot of ways of what it can look like. And this is a group that you found kind of within a church, and but yet it hasn't looked like a homogenous group of we're all the same, we look all the same, we act all the same, we're in the same stage of life. So talk about that.
So this group, we actually didn't meet. We don't all go to the same church. And so it's been this really fun dynamic that now, 4 years later, we're actually all going to the same church that is now in Richardson. And so it's been like the sweet time of before we would all go to different church, and now we're all showing up to the same church, which has kind of changed the way we like just interact with each other on a weekly basis. But yeah, this group, we meet Tuesdays and we share a meal and we break bread together. And we have couples with kids, couples without kids, couples that are adopting and have dealt with infertility. And we've walked through those struggles with them. And we've had other couples that are on their third kid and ones that are just about to have a baby. And then there's been several single people in our group that have now kind of left the group and I'm kind of that one single person there. But what I love about this group is that they are very intentional with whatever stage of life you're in. And so they kind of meet you where you're at within that stage of life. And so walking with our friends when they were not able to have kids and the joy it was to receive the news that they had a placement and that they had a baby to adopt was something that was really fun for us as a group to get excited with them, but also to mourn the previous 4 years with them and to be able to see that baby come into their home and find this joy with them and know how long it's been that we've been awaiting the Lord's faithfulness in their life.
That's so cool. I mean, I think that takes a lot, again, of a lot of grace and a lot also of just kind of humility to go, there's aspects of your life that look really different than mine. Mm-hmm. And let's allow that to be an opportunity to grow and get to know each other better instead of saying, you look different than me, therefore it's uncomfortable, therefore maybe I'm going to distance myself because you don't look like me, or, you know, I don't even know what you have to offer, I have to offer
right.
you, right? And so I think it's neat to see how you have had a view of how can my singleness be a blessing for couples and families, and to also see it in action of some families really allowing their stage of life to be a blessing to you and your singleness. So talk about your current living situation and how that kind of goes perfectly in line with what we're talking about.
Yeah. I live with one of the couples that has three kiddos. I got really close with them the first time I started going to this Tuesday group, and Alex and I just kind of clicked and really got along great and were just able to have really good conversation. And then after I met her, I just decided, you know what, after work, I'm just going to stop by her house. She lived two streets down from me. And so I just made it a point to kind of stop in and just say hi when I was coming back from work. And then anytime I would just kind of text her and be like, hey, can I come over? I don't have much going on. Would love to come hang out. And Alex is very much a homebody. And so it was sweet that she was always like, yeah, come on. Like, we're not doing much. Kids are playing in the backyard. I'm cooking dinner. Would love some company. And so we kind of created that friendship of I would just stop in every day and just say hi and sometimes stay for dinner. And they were just a family that really kind of invited me in of like, hey, you're going to come into our messy home and you're just going to have to be okay with this because this is just the stage I'm at. There's no point in me picking up toys because 2 minutes later, the kids are going to have them out again. So there's, I'm not going to waste my energy on that. Yeah. And it was sweet to walk into that and just being like, this is truly who they are. And this is, I'm walking into their mess and they're welcoming me into their mess. And I can bring kind of my mess with it too.
Right.
And so that was just really sweet. And then I had two roommates that I was living with and they both kind of decided to go different ways. And so I was kind of left with this kind of daunting feeling at the age of 31 to find new roommates. It's one of those ages where you're kind of done with having roommates and kind of adjusting to life. And so I was sitting in my room and just counting how many roommates I've had. And I've had 17 roommates in the last, 8 years. And so it's been a lot of transition. And so I think I just kind of was like, I guess this is it. Like, this is where I find an apartment and live by myself. And Alex invited me over and she was like, I know this isn't ideal or anything, but we've just been thinking. And we just want to let you know that if you need a place to live, like our home, we will make it work for you to live with us. And so that truly was just the Lord's answer to prayers, because I was very much in this daunting feeling of like, it's my time to live by myself and have an apartment and it just be me. And to receive that and for them to kind of move their boys to live together and not have separate rooms. Mm-hmm. And so they're sacrificing. But for them to welcome me in was probably the most meaningful thing that kind of happened within that really like hard time for me, because it was a time of just sorrow and realizing that singleness is part of my life. And so how do I live with singleness with, I've never even really dated anybody. So I don't even know what that feels like to even have somebody that close. But this just felt right. And it's exactly what I needed in this time of singleness and feeling the loneliness at the end of the night. It's so fun to come home to three kids that are excited to see me when I walk through the door and are willing to greet me with a hug. And when I leave for trips, they're sad to see me go and excited to see me come home. And to have friends that, even as they sit as a couple, when Alex and Robert are sitting on the couch and it's just them two and I come in and they're always like, what are we going to watch tonight? Like, what are we going to do? Like, it's still 8 p.m. Yeah. So we still got a lot to do. Like, what do we want to do while we hang out? And so that has just been what my heart has needed. This isn't how I pictured having a family at 31. But I know that this is exactly how the Lord wanted me to have a family. And so I'm taking it all in. I get the benefits of cuddles with kids, but when they're bad, I let Alex and Robert take over, you know?
Yeah. And what do the kids call you?
They call me TML.
TML. So T is a Spanish word for aunt. Yeah. So they're a live-in aunt.
Yeah. And so it's been really fun. But yeah, it's nice that I can put them to bed at night and I don't have to wake up at 3 a.m. When they do wake up wanting mom and dad. And so it's been a sweet time to just see the Lord's faithfulness in it of, again, not the way I pictured myself having a family, but I'm happy for the family I have right now.
What's cool is that I've gotten to know this family a little bit through Melissa and through just going to visit you. And I know firsthand just how their view of their home is really, this is a resource that God's given us to bless other people. And so my husband and I actually were able to, with our kids at one point, we were in the area and had a family member who was very sick in the hospital. And their family was on a trip. And so this was before Melissa was even living with them. But they said to Melissa, hey, we want, you know, Tim and Whitney and their family just to stay in our house all week. They don't need to get a hotel. Let them, let their kids go play with our kids' toys and play in the backyard on our swing set and watch our TV and just rest and cook food in our kitchen. And so it was really sweet. It's been sweet to see them and their perspective of, we have this resource and how can we steward this resource well to bless others.
So
that's really cool to see that. So, okay. So what are some of the most helpful things? I mean, obviously we're talking about this situation, you know, that maybe even people that listen might go, well, I don't have the opportunity to maybe bring someone into my house. But what are some things, even when we're just looking at like overcoming some boundaries and some ways that we put up dividing walls between maybe single people and married people or families, what are some of the most helpful things that people can do for you or have done for you or have even said that you could share with us?
Yeah, I mean, I think just having conversations with me. I'm reminded of this other couple in our group, Jake and Camille, that even through their infertility road, they came to me, and like Camille has very much reached out to me and said, when we're going to an engagement party or where we're going to a bachelorette, she is very much aware of the pain that comes with going to an engagement party, that it's not me getting engaged or me planning for a wedding. And Camille has always just been hyper aware with that. And so at these bachelorette parties, she's just always hugging me and saying like, I know this is hard and I'm so thankful that you're here. And just being able to have that conversation of like, baby showers were hard for her to go to and sometimes unbearable. And so she would have to say no. And for me, engagements were hard. Watching people start dating and people get excited about dating was hard. And Camille was that one person that kind of just asked the hard questions of like, how are you in singleness as so-and-so gets engaged? How are you as we are about to go on this bachelorette weekend? She was always hyper aware of where she knew she had pain, where I would also have pain. And so I think it's just kind of relating yourself to them and then asking those questions. And, you know, I have a lot of friends that have just really been sweet of letting me be in the place of singleness and not kind of saying, oh, well, it must be nice to have naps. Like, you should try with three kids. Like, there's less comments of that, of just letting me be like, man, enjoy that. That's so great that you have that because, when you do have kids, that's just not something that's readily available or whatever. And so letting me be in my state of singleness, but yet bringing me into their married life and being like, this is what's hard about married life. Can I talk to you about it? And then again, with dates, it's hard when you do double dates. And so there's been situations where some of my closest friends go on dates and I get asked to babysit. And so I think it's one of those things where single people do want to get invited to that stuff. And so one of my biggest advice is don't ever say no for a single person. If you're going on a double date and you're doing something that you think they would enjoy that too, we would love to go get a meal and watch some basketball or whatever, of just inviting that single person versus asking them to babysit, I think could be the world. If they don't want to join, they'll say no. But I think they would feel way more loved if you just get to come and join in on those double dates, because I don't know how long I'll be single for, but some of my closest friends are all married. And so I think it just brings value of like, I'm no longer the 17-year-old that babysits all the time. I'm 31 and actually want to hang out. And I don't necessarily want to babysit all the time, especially if we're not close. And so just assuming that single people want to come hang out with married couples. And if they don't, they'll tell you. And so I think that would be my biggest advice.
Wow. I'm just thinking as you're talking about how we can so easily be offended and that those offenses can kind of drive us apart and drive wedges, and how the pain of your friend Camille's infertility and sometimes your pain in the state of singleness when you desire to be married is something that they're not the same, right? Mm-hmm. They're not, this is just, you know, it's not you guys even saying, well, which is worse or which is harder or whatever, but identifying the pain and then entering into that, even though it looks different. So what are some things you're learning right now?
Yeah, I feel like this past just 5 years of living in Dallas, I've really just drawn closer to the Lord, which has been really neat to see, because I feel like being in the States has actually feels like it's magnified my singleness and the feeling like I need to be married by age X, whatever that is. But I feel like even as I turned 30 and the next day or like the next year, it was very much like, wow, I need to step this up if I want to get married, like almost as if there is a timeline for me to get married. But really just learning more of the Lord's faithfulness through that. And as I said before, getting to have a family with Robert and Alex, but then also just like listening to different messages and reading different books, not necessarily just about singleness, but just of just walking daily with the Lord. And so I just got back from our big Young Life conference, and one of the guys that was speaking there, David Platt, who's written numerous books, said something in one of the sessions of him talking about just the story of Ruth. And then he talked about his like struggle with infertility with his wife and how the Lord now has given them 5 kids and his faithfulness through that. And he said something that really kind of struck me and that I'm trying to hold on to for the year 2020 as I currently am still single and just wanting to know where the Lord is taking me with this, but he said something of like, maybe that the Lord is just setting the stage in those moments where we think he is so far away from us because of our trials that we're going to, that maybe he's just setting up the stage to show the greatest story of faithfulness yet. Mm. And so he mentioned of like how he sits at his dining room table and he sees all his kids and never in his life as he was in the pits of infertility, did he think he'd be sitting at a full table of his kids. And so I think I have just been constantly reminded of that this month of like, man, the Lord's just setting the stage for the greatest story of his faithfulness in my life. And man, it doesn't look like the way I've asked him and the way that I've prayed, and it hasn't been answered exactly how I want it to, but I don't know how long the stage is going to take to get set up, but to hold on to even that story of Ruth and to know that the Lord's faithfulness and that Ruth is part of the genealogy of all the people that brought the Savior who ended up dying on the cross for us, like to even know that in her biggest trials, the Lord was setting a stage for a way bigger story that would outlast Ruth and anybody else in that genealogy. And so kind of just been holding very tightly to those words of that David Platt kind of brought up to us as an encouragement. And so, yeah, just holding on to that for this year.
I love that. That's really cool. Yeah. Okay, one final question for you. Mm. Have you read any books lately that you would recommend?
Well, Alex has been on this Elizabeth Elliot kick, and so we've been reading all books Elizabeth Elliot. She'll read them, and then she'll pass them on to me, and they've been just really sweet. I'm currently reading Suffering Isn't for Nothing, I believe is the title of the book by Elizabeth Elliot. And so it's just been like hearing somebody who's gone through extreme pains of losing two husbands and still deciding to go back on the mission field and not being tired of being on the mission
field. Just for clarification, she wasn't married to two husbands at one time.
Right. Elizabeth Elliot was married once and her husband was killed on the mission field. She went back into the mission field after her husband was killed and then remarried. And he, unfortunately, the second husband passed of cancer. And so she lost, you know, both husbands that she thought, you know, would be there for her. And so, just her faithfulness to the Lord, even though there is deep sorrow in her entire story of just knowing how faithful she was to the Lord, that I kind of had this desire to really read more about her and how she suffered well. And I would love for just to be prepared for what comes next.
Thank you so much for being here today. It's just so fun to get to hang out and talk about things that I feel like sometimes we talk about these things, but honestly, not to this great extent. So I feel like just sitting here as we're, you know, having this interview that will hopefully just encourage some other people in whatever way they need to be encouraged. I just love getting to learn more from you. So
yeah,
I loved it. Yeah.
Thanks for having me. This is fun.
So fun.
We'll be back in just a minute after a word from our sponsor.
Welcome back to another episode of A Trip to the Principal's Office.
Oh, no.
Should we call it that?
I thought I was a cross between the principal's office and a Bon Jovi concert.
Yeah, but these are more like a trip to the principal's office.
Oh my gosh.
But I don't know if it's you going to the principal's office or me.
I am going to the principal's office. Basically, it's like you're giving me a taste of my own medicine.
Are these conversations are punishments? Is that what you're saying?
I don't know. It's like they're like payback for all the hard questions I ask you and other people all the time.
Yeah, well, serves you right.
Okay. Go ahead.
What is your favorite part of parenting in the season we are in right now?
okay, is it bad that all I could think about was the things that I don't have to do?
No, I think that's part of it.
Like, I love that I don't have to change diapers anymore. I love that I get to sleep and I don't have to wake up all night long. I love that I don't have to push a stroller. Yeah, so let's put in the positive.
Those are all the negative things.
All the things I hated, enjoy about right now. I despised about the beginning of parenting. No, I just love that our kids are in this kind of sweet, independent dependence, right? So they're independent enough to entertain themselves, right? Because their ages are 5, just turned 5 to 9.5. And so they're like gloriously independent in the sense that they can all go to the bathroom by themselves for the most part. We have those incidences still.
They can feed themselves.
They can feed themselves for the most part. They can, you know, they actually can have some responsibility. You know, when they're like 2 and you they want to bake with you, you're like, this is actually way more work for me. And now it's like, okay, I can give you a job like emptying the dishwasher or going to check on the chickens, things like that. And it's like, it actually is helpful, you know? And they can ride their bikes without training wheels on their own, you know? They can, like, I can actually get some stuff done now with interruptions, right? But they can work on something together, play something together. But then they're still dependent in the sense that they still want to spend time with us.
They still like us.
They like us, right? They still think we're cool.
And we're their heroes still.
Yeah. Like, they still want to kind of cuddle, like, come in bed. Like, last night, there was a storm last night, and they want to come in bed with us. They were scared, you know? So, I think it's this real sweet spot where I know that they're not going to always be this, you know, into us and think we're so fun and cool. I mean, even though we are, so.
One of us is. That's up to them to decide.
Yeah, we'll let the audience decide. But yeah, I think that, and the, but it's, yeah, so it's this in-between place for sure.
I think that's a good way to put it. So within that, is there like a certain thing that is your favorite part? Like, if you had to narrow it down to one single thing that's your favorite right now in this season,
like a thing to do, or more like a part of the day,
just something that you enjoy about being a mom right now in 2021
with them in this age bracket,
this age,
from 5 to 9. I feel like they're, for the most part, I feel like they're really impressionable, moldable, teachable, and eager to learn, and so that presents a lot of sweet moments if I'm paying attention and if I'm really aware, you know, where they ask a good question and then they're actually a captive audience. They're not on a screen, nobody has phones yet, and so they're really listening.
But even that can be a bad thing if you're not on top of your parenting.
For sure, yeah.
Because then being impressionable means that they're little copycats and parents running around.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, like,
they just repeat everything and want to do exactly what we're doing.
Yeah, for sure. Or even just like the things that, you know, even things that aren't bad, but things that maybe you, the tone that you're talking about someone or to someone, or, you know, just, yeah, they are, it's true. They're very impressionable.
They're
a little more discerning too now, where it's like, you know, like, I got pulled over recently. And so since then, Charlotte has been really
driving all the time. You just let her drive at 9.
Yeah, I started letting her drive. No, now it's like she's calling me out. She'll be like the other day, I just like blew through a stop sign. And she was like, Mom, your driving is just out of control. And I was like, I know, I'm sorry. I was just thinking about how we got to get to school in time. But it's like they're more aware now, where they can kind of challenge us on things. Like, if we're not doing something that we have taught them, you know,
they'll call you on it.
They can notice it. Yeah. So they're discerning a little bit more, picking up on some things, you know.
They'll call BS.
Yeah, for sure. You know, but yeah, I would say that, just the teachable moments with the kids. And but in that too, I would say like seeing their unique giftings has been really, really fun about this season. You know, I feel like we both talked about how it's like you can start to see not just their personalities, but kind of just their God fingerprint of how God's made them and wired them and their brains to work. And they're starting to see those things about themselves, even like the things that they're good at and then each other is gifted in, or, you know, is just, yeah, is really made for, you know?
Yeah. Okay. So parenting and woven is your job right now. But what is the weirdest job you've ever had?
Weirdest.
Like the most unusual job you've ever had in your lifetime. All the way back. You can go as far back as you need to.
Oh my gosh, I actually just thought of this recently. I don't even think I've ever told you this before.
Oh jeez.
But there was a
I'm nervous now.
There was a family friend, okay, who owned a t-shirt shop, okay? And he needed someone to, I was like 14. He needed someone to help put the t-shirts on that, like...
Mannequin?
No. That, like, circular machine. It's kind of like a spider where it, like, you know,
The screen press.
The screen press, right? And so it kind of, like, goes around and you have to take the shirts off and put them on.
Right.
So I did it, I think, for a couple days. And I'm not joking you. The fumes, the smell of all of the, like, the ink and everything, all the chemicals in that warehouse made me so sick that I threw up and I quit.
On the shirts?
No, not on the shirts. But, like, after I worked one day, I remember being like, I'm going to throw up. And I did. And I was like, I can't do this job anymore. Like, it was, like, 3 days into it. I never even told you that, did I?
No.
And then after that, I went for a little more dumbed down, and I worked at a scrapbooking store. And so I would...
They have stores for this stuff?
Not anymore. They're all shut down. Everything's digital now. But they had a whole store of stickers. There was like a whole wall of just like paper with squiggly lines, you know? Like... And these ladies, I remember, would come in and drop like $1,200 on like paper and stickers. And they would bring, you know, their friends and their wine. And they would have like a kind of a edgy girls night out and stay up late spending all their money at the scrapbooking store.
It sounds like a nightmare.
I think I made like $6 an hour or something.
Oh, geez.
Yeah, it was... But it was my first job, other than the screen printing.
I don't think you were actually screen printing. You were just like sweatshop labor.
Oh yeah, maybe so. I guess we're just now piecing that together.
Is it even legal to hire a 14-year-old?
Well, no. But there was probably some, like, I don't know, I probably got some deal of like I got some cool t-shirts or something.
Yeah, that's called child labor.
I'll ask my parents about it.
They probably got the free t-shirts. That's what was going on. Your dad was doing a backdoor deal on free t-shirts if he provided the labor.
No, it was above board. I
think what was happening is you were probably getting high off of those fumes and your 14-year-old body couldn't handle it.
That's possible too.
That might be the only time you've ever gotten high. Probably. It was off of t-shirt chemical fumes.
Oh my gosh. We're so off topic now.
No, we're completely off topic.
Okay.
But that is the last question for today. So
for this outro.
For this episode of A Trip to the Principal's Office. Join us next time. Adios.
Okay, y'all. I have a really fun update to this podcast. So we recorded this episode in January of 2020. Before the pandemic shifted everything and paused the launch of this podcast. Well, about May of last year, Melissa met a guy named Jason. They began to develop a friendship that turned into something more. And just this past weekend on May 22nd, a couple days before the scheduled release of this podcast,
Jason asked Melissa to marry him. I am not joking. Isn't God's timing amazing? It's so fun to listen back to Melissa talking about God setting the stage for a great story of his faithfulness, while neither of us had any clue what he had in store.
To find show notes for this and past episodes, or to engage on a deeper level, you can go to wovenministry.com/podcast. If you enjoy what you hear so far, please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. It helps listeners find and share this feed. If you'd like to tell us what you enjoyed about this podcast or ask your hard question, you can call us at 512-815-2446. That's 512-815-2446. You'll simply leave a voicemail with what's on your mind, and we might just include your voice on a future episode. Music and editing for the show is by Callan Brown, recording and production by Tim Scarborough. I'm Whitney Scarborough, and we'll be back here with more very soon. Thanks for listening.